I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to the Randomly Generated History Club, where us three non-historians, we pick a year at random and try to learn things about it. I'm Ant and I'm here with my two friends, William and Anna.
Hello.
Hello.
This week, we're talking about the year 1519. So as per usual, can we give our three words preview as a snapshot? Judging by Will's face, he doesn't have three words ready. So Anna, let's start with you.
Okay, my three words are stop the beat.
Stop the beat.
Stop the beat.
Stop the beat.
Beat.
Can you spell beat?
B-E-A-T.
Oh, not beat. Not beats.
No, okay. But you should stop those because they're gross.
They're amazing. Will.
My three words are man, not marmalade.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay. And mine is yummy, yummy spice.
Ooh.
Ooh. Not marmalade.
Not marmalade.
Yummy, yummy spice.
Okay. I think once again, we're all hungry. This is the vibe that will carry us through the episode.
Okay. So today, I'm going to cover off a part of history that is a little bit complex, and a bit of controversy, so we should address it, but nonetheless is still a pretty big deal. We're going to talk about, in my segment, the Age of Exploration, and in particular, one of the fathers of the Age of Exploration, who is...
Christopher Columbus?
Nope.
Cortez?
Oh, no. He's. I tried to avoid him.
Yeah.
Magellan. Magellan.
Magellan like Magellan.
Magellan or Ferdinand Magellan.
Ferdinand.
Ferdinand. That's what
Nando.
I said. Nando Mags. Master of Maps. King of Compasses.
Ooh.
Dawn of Discovery. And like,
yeah.
Great guy. Anyway, he started off his journey into being an adventurer as a page at the age of 12 in the court of the King John II of Portugal, where he's from. So he's Portuguese.
What is a page? As in like in a book?
No.
People would write words on them and then turn him over the
other
side.
Have you seen Beauty and the Beast?
Yes.
You know how all those things are cursed to be animate?
Oh, he was a cursed book?
He was a cursed book.
Oh, yeah, that makes more sense to me. Please
and
continue,
after a few years, he could upgrade to being a candlestick or something.
Yeah.
No, these are like just like, I guess, like courtly boys.
Quirky boys?
Courtly, as you can hear outside right now, there's some our pages outside.
They're running wild out there.
I hope the listeners could hear that. Otherwise, we're just saying insane stuff. Anyway, so they're
which
just like
is different from usual.
Courtly boys, they wear frills.
Yep.
They learn things like geography, cartography, astronomy, and like applied adventuring, I guess. Anyway, so in the Portuguese court of King John II, he eventually does fall out of favor with the Portuguese king, who then progressed to being Manuel I, after he was accused of illegally trading with the Moors, a charge that he denied, but led to his dismissal from the court. So he was Page no more.
They really closed the book on him.
He left it. They really closed the book. And so, unable to further his ambitions of being an explorer for Portugal, he decides to go to Spain in 1517.
So he's guys will read anything.
Yeah, he's about 25 at the time. Yeah, they'll read.
Why couldn't you trade with the Moors? Like, who cares?
Why couldn't you trade with the Moors? Well, yeah. You can trade with them legally, but not illegally. So I'm assuming there was, I don't know, some sort of
this
like...
This is post Reconquista, so yeah. They're the big-time enemies again. Yeah.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, they're not like sort of in favor. So anyway, at this time, as we kind of all sort of know, there was a massive rush to explore the world. And by explore, I mean exploit it for riches and suppress the civilizations you encounter. Another famous voyage to the New World was under the Spanish conquistador Hernan Cortes, who went off to visit with the Aztecs. And by visit, I mean brutally suppress and conquer and systematically destroy. Yeah. So actually, interesting. Apparently, the sort of Aztec capital at the time had about 200,000 people in it. So it was absolutely...
Wow. It was massive.
Massive, you know, it was huge.
Actually, I thought it was more than that, but yeah, it was huge.
So Spain was obviously a huge proponent of this, and, you know, they're in competition with their arch frenemies, which were the Portuguese. Mm-hmm. And so Ferdinand Magellan, he now decides to set off on one of his famous voyages to the Spice Islands, which is exactly where you'd want to go if you were in pursuit of... Spice. Yeah, it's very valuable spice.
Hit mid-90s Brit pop.
Yeah, exactly.
Girl power flavor.
So is sponsored by the Spanish crown, and Magellan was inspired by this promise of vast wealth that could be acquired from the spice trade. And so the expedition then set sail in September 20th, 1519 from Sanlúcar in Spain with a fleet of 5 ships and about 270 adventuring men.
Mm. Wow.
And they're all men, of course, because that was how it was done.
Oh, yeah, you can't have a woman on a ship. We have no sense of balance.
I mean, you don't have a sense of balance, but I don't think we can extrapolate that to all women.
No, I am the perfect exemplar of womankind.
And they all needed to be spiced.
They all needed to. The spice must flow.
Yeah.
And so they went off with the Harkonnens. So the goal of this ambitious voyage was to find a western route to the Spice Islands that was to avoid the well-established and this dangerous route around Africa that was dangerous for storms and weather systems, etc., but also because it was controlled by the Portuguese. So, you know, frenemies didn't really want to do that.
Yeah.
As such, this expedition has often been described as an endeavor to circumnavigate the globe, even though that was not really the original intention. It kind of just happened by happenstance. He didn't say, you know, like, if you think about it, who's going to sponsor, you want to circumnavigate the world? Or like, oh, you want to cross into like the Middle East? It's like, no. You want to go for oil, like, you know, and just happen to cross the Middle East, you know, that kind of thing. So they kind of just stumbled into the sort of circumnavigation by mistake because they just kind of like kept on going left, I guess.
And the globe kept on being a sphere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the significant achievements of the expedition was the discovery of the strait at the southern end of South America that now bears Magellan's name, which is the Strait of Magellan.
Oh.
Yeah, the passage enabled the fleet to navigate from the Atlantic Ocean to the Pacific Ocean, which Magellan famously referred to as Mar Pacifico, or the Peaceful Sea, due to its relative calmness compared to the Atlantic. So he actually named the Pacific Ocean.
Oh.
Yeah.
I mean, it's nice that he didn't name it after himself.
It is, actually. I mean, he did name the straits after himself, I guess.
Well, you know. That's fine.
He ran out of things that he could probably claim.
Yeah.
Also, like, the Pacific Ocean probably did have several other names to it. It's not like, you know... Anyway, like the
it's
people
like
in
no one had noticed it before.
Yeah, the people in Hawaii just called it like, whatever. Anyway, so despite this major accomplishment, the voyage was filled with, you can say, numerous hardships. The fleet endured extreme weather conditions, you know, all the classics, scurvy, starvation, mutiny, and I think I read conflict with indigenous populations.
Oh, so by conflict, euphemism.
Yeah, conflict probably read some like absolutely brutal stuff that the explorers inflicted upon them, and you know, were surprised at any repercussions that came their way.
Yeah,
they were just there. You know, we're just coming out here to conquer. Like, you know, why would you resist this?
We just found this whole brand new ocean that we found
exactly
and that is ours.
So by the time they actually reached the Pacific Ocean in November 1520, only three ships remained.
Out of five.
Okay. Yeah. Quick quiz then, just to recap and a little bit of spice into the story, as it were. Who was the first person to circumnavigate the globe?
Not Magellan.
I don't know.
Well, don't know is definitely not the right answer. But Anna, you're right. Apparently it's not Magellan because
He died?
Yeah, he did. He did the one thing you can't do when trying to achieve something is die before
die
you achieve
halfway
it.
Halfway through.
Yeah, so he did not complete the voyage himself. He was killed in April 1521 during the Battle of Mactan in the Philippines. So he died and therefore, you know, couldn't continue.
Was that like effectively by locals trying to defend themselves?
Yeah. Okay. They were doing something really simple, like going there, you know, taking land and valuables.
Yeah.
And, you know, all this kind of innocent, just, you know.
Yeah.
Did they not know there's an age of exploration? We're explorers.
Yeah.
Just lads, just doing lad things.
If you didn't want to be explored, you shouldn't have been there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's just typical banter, locker room banter stuff, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
So he was killed there, unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on like which side of the divide you're on, really. And the leadership of the expedition was assumed by a chap under his command called Juan Sebastian Elcano. And when Magellan died, his slave, Enrique, also continued the journey. And it's actually suggested that Enrique was actually the first one to circumnavigate the globe. Aww. Because when the ships did eventually come back, they didn't actually come back to the same port. And so Enrique then continued on to the first port because obviously he had to report the news of the death. And so there is potential. I mean, it's very hard to corroborate.
Yeah.
But there's potential that Enrique was actually the first one to legitimately finish that last five miles or 10 miles.
Good
or
on you, Enrique.
Yeah. I mean, he didn't really have a choice being a slave, I guess. So like, you know, he wasn't a page, I think, you know.
Yeah. But we can give him some glory.
Yeah. Still. We can definitely. So, it's still up for debate. You know, a bit of a myth to there as well. So we're not sure. Anyway, the expedition does finally reach the Spice Islands in November 1521, where they loaded the remaining ships with precious cloves, yummy, yummy cloves and other spices.
Clove for days.
And on the way back to Spain, one of the two ships was captured by the Portuguese, leaving only one ship left.
Wow.
So, which is called the Victoria. And the Victoria was the only ship to return back
aptly named,
home.
I would say.
So under Elcano's command, Victoria returned in September 1522, thus completing the first known circumnavigation of the Earth. And of the 200 and something people that set off, 270, only 18 of the original crew survived.
You don't like those odds.
Grueling 3-year voyage.
Wow.
And like the thing is, like, you know, the expedition barely made any profit because they lost four ships. And how many clove can you fit on one ship that's worth four other ships?
Yeah.
Plus, not to mind the life insurance and indemnity for all the lost sailors.
And the court costs. You're going to be tied up in legal.
It did prove, like, you know, sort of a valuable in its own right for the knowledge of the globe's geography, just for one thing, and the Pacific Ocean. And it sort of like finally put to bed once and for all, you know, the sort of the big overarching question, just how big is the world, you know? Just how big is it? We, you know, and
what was the answer?
Pretty big. About four ships and 3 years worth.
Yeah.
And it laid the foundations then for future exploration and colonization across the Pacific.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Yeah. So good news. One other fun fact before I wrap up is that Magellan also discovered on his voyage in the Pacific Ocean the Magellanic Clouds, another thing he named after himself, which are two irregular dwarf galaxies that are visible only from the southern hemisphere.
So
people probably did see them, but he just made a specific note of them,
and also like the people that live there know about them.
He probably did have some magnification type devices with him as well, like a, you know, digital zoom.
I think he had a really wide aperture camera. He just let go for the whole.
Well, there you go. Magellan, you know, it is a big important part of history. It is somewhat, I would say, colored by all the things about it. But it is important nonetheless.
Yeah. Can you imagine how cool the stars would look like if you're in the middle of the Pacific Ocean? Man, you'd be able to see everything. I could find some galaxies.
Yeah, true.
Even these eyes could find some galaxies. You plop me down in the middle of the Pacific. I don't know.
We discussed your lack of balance. You might not be able to.
I think if I laid down on the...
strapped you down to the
I'm
the
a very
forecastle.
Good sailor, for what it's worth.
But it's an act of imperialism to name any of them, isn't it? Without consulting
the aliens.
But I'm
the
I'm
aliens
cool,
that inhabit
though.
The galaxies.
Exactly.
Yeah. But I'm cool.
Mm. That's what Magellan thought about all his naming of things.
I think he knew.
Anna, I'm officially cancelling you.
Honestly, it's about time. All right. Well, from conquering unknown territories to one of history's greatest epidemics, which is what I'm going to talk about today.
Is this Pogs?
Pogs.
They were
that's
everywhere.
Right. Pogs. Invented in 1519. No, not Pogs, not the Black Plague, not smallpox, but dancing mania. Dancing mania. This is a real thing, I swear. And we'll get into all the modern hypotheses of what was actually behind it. But first, the history. So dancing mania is also known as choreomania, tarantism, or St. Vitus's dance. St. Vitus?
Vitus, I think, maybe?
St. Vitus, his dance. It's basically exactly what it sounds like. Large groups of people start dancing, or at least moving around wildly, and are unable to stop themselves.
What?
Some can get injured or die of exhaustion or any number of nasty ends, and it just spreads from people to people. I know.
Will
and
I
see the look on your faces. I promise this is not an elaborate hoax. This really happened. It is documented throughout history.
Is this like document a psychosocial thing or like a disease?
Yeah. Well, yeah. So there's a lot of theories for why it happened. Which
was it just a really good beat?
Yeah, exactly. You know, sometimes the spirit moves you. I promise we'll get into the theories, but suspend your disbelief while I talk about some examples of it. So the earliest known outbreak, and it is funny because as I was researching this, like obviously we've now all lived through an actual pandemic, epidemic. And so it was very hard to write things like the earliest known outbreak and then remember that the symptoms were dancing.
Yeah.
Like, it's very bizarre. Anyway, the earliest known outbreak was in the 7th century, and incidents occurred with some regularity until around the 17th century. It almost always happened in Europe, but it was pretty widespread throughout Europe. I see the looks on your faces. Yeah, I promise this is not going to end with me saying, psych, none of this happened. Yeah.
Okay, sorry. I can't remove this look of what the fuck off my head. So I'm pressing my suspension of disbelief button.
Good.
I am now completely gullible and able to follow anything you want. Sell me a bridge, whatever it is.
Good. Well, speaking of bridges.
I'm interested.
In 1278, 200 people in the plague, with the plague dancing mania, were dancing over a bridge that then collapsed.
Oh, wow.
And then the
I believe that.
The survivors were brought, nursed back to full health at like a shrine or a church of St. Vitus. And so there was then, from then on, this legend that it was connected to him, to that saint somehow. One of the first major outbreaks was in the Holy Roman Empire in what is now Germany in 1374, and it spread throughout the region of Germany and even as far away as Italy. And contemporary chronicles describe episodes of dancing mania like this. People paraded around naked and made obscene gestures, which is just like watching a football match in some cities. Some acted like animals. People jumped, hopped, and leaped about. They hardly stopped, and some danced until they broke their ribs and subsequently died. Some observers of dancing mania were treated violently if they refused to join in. And most bizarrely, dancers had odd reactions to the color red.
What?
Either not being able to perceive it or becoming violent upon seeing it. They also couldn't stand pointed shoes.
I am with them there. I am absolutely with them there.
Worst.
They would hate Louboutin, wouldn't they?
They just pinch your toes. I get it. I can't dance in pointed shoes, and any number of wedding guests can confirm this.
I'm assuming the points are supposed to like start after your toes finish, right? They don't just like conically shape your
feet
together.
Classic not a woman. I mean, they start, well, let's not get into the shoes, but they, yeah, they sort of start and then, anyway, it doesn't matter. Pointed shoes. And also the dancers enjoyed their feet being hit.
Okay, what? This is just a bunch of people with like some very niche things that they're into. Or anti-red.
Yeah, I know. Who can say? Well, I can say in about 1 minute.
Not shaming.
Not shaming. No, love a dance, no matter what your motivation. Okay, so this brings us to 1518. Mm. Yes, I know the year we're talking about is 1519, but I found this and it was either talk about this fascinating dancing plague or like Cortez and the Aztecs and really grim stuff on this comedy podcast. So I chose Dancing Mania.
Good choice. Yeah. Good choice.
So in Strasbourg in 1518, it's July 1518, and a woman named Frau Trofea began to dance fervently in the street, and she kept it up for about a week straight. After some time, 36 people had joined her, and by August, a month later, it was up to 400 victims.
Wow.
Now, the source I read said 400 victims were, quote, eventually consumed by the dancing compulsion. It's really unclear if anybody died, and if so, how many people died, but several contemporary sources say at least a number of them did die, and some reports said as many as 15 people per day were dying.
Whoa.
Which, if you're organizing a dance-a-thon, is not a great outcome,
No, it's really not. Really not.
So the dancers suffered a variety of ailments, including chest pains, convulsions, hallucinations, hyperventilation, epileptic fits, and visions. In the end, most simply dropped down, overwhelmed with exhaustion. Enter the town leaders, who tried lots of things to stop the mania.
Heavy shoes?
Heavy, yeah. Really, really square-toed shoes. Yeah. They banned the color red. No, but just as silly, my favorite of their attempts was them working on the theory that the solution to the dancing mania was more dancing.
Oh my God. It's like, you know, you get caught smoking a cigarette, you're going to smoke the whole pack.
Exactly.
And be more addicted to nicotine.
That's exactly what it is. So the town leaders arranged these giant venues for the dancers to gather in. They hired musicians to play alongside, and they hired professional dancers to come join in with the people who were undergoing the mania. How do we think that helped?
I'm going to say poorly.
Did that make the problem worse?
It did, in fact, make the problem worse. It
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Exacerbated the contagion, and the mania spread even to those musicians and professional dancers who were hired.
And were they dancing in the absence of music as well? And so, like, what's the difference between dancing and just kind of like, I guess, some sort of like fitting or something?
Yeah.
Like,
you know, well, people say dancing because that's like the easiest way to describe it. Yeah. I think it covered all manner of like bodily movement.
Yeah, they weren't like doing step ball changes.
It wasn't just like jazz hands everywhere, but it was convulsive in many cases
movement.
Dance-like enough that it to separate it from any sort of like involuntary convulsion.
Yeah. Like I guess like a sort of an epileptic fit is devoid of.
Right. And I think some people were probably more on that end, but other people were literally just dancing. And so yeah, this whole thing, there's a lot of speculation,
Of course.
Yeah. So that was not a great idea. It did not lead to any sort of solution to the dancing mania. The next great idea by the town leaders was to ban dancing.
Uh-huh.
And it worked just about as well as it did in Footloose. But for some reason, by September, so started in July, so by September, the mania began to subside and the people stopped. So let's speculate on some causes. As I mentioned at the beginning, there is no consensus for why this happened and why it has happened repeatedly throughout history. And every theory has at least one hole or doesn't cover some element of what was happening.
But before you go into that, is there anything in sort of modern history like this?
No. So there have been no outbreaks of this like dancing mania since the 17th century. There are a couple of unknown social psychoactive events. Like there was something called like a laughing epidemic in the 1960s in what's now Tanzania, where a bunch of schoolgirls were like just started laughing uncontrollably kind of spread throughout a whole village or something. But there have been no mentions of the dancing.
I mean, I think with the laughing, that sort of makes a bit more sense because that could be just a chemical thing in the brain, something that affects that.
And if you're like dancing, teenage girls, pre-teen girls, but the dancing mania has not, there have been no documented outbreaks of it since the 17th century. So some of the causes speculated. So a lot of, as you can imagine, a lot of medical theories have been put forward, including encephalitis, epilepsy, typhus. But those conditions can't account for all the symptoms. And some aren't contagious. You know, you can't like catch epilepsy. So it would be hard to have one sort of disease or condition explain why, how so many dozens or hundreds of people were doing this. My favorite theory is that there's a fungus called ergot that grows commonly on grains like rye, and especially if there's been heavy rains or flooding, it really thrives on these grains. And if you ingest it, you get poisoned. It's called ergotism, and ergotamine is the main psychoactive product of the fungus, and it's structurally similar to LSD. So we could just be talking about a massive acid trip.
That's fascinating.
And that was like the prevailing theory for a while, because ergotism can cause hallucinations and convulsions, but it can't account for all of the strange behavior most commonly identified with dancing mania. So again, it can cover like some bit, but maybe not all of what was happening.
It might be like multifaceted, so that could be part of it. Then sort of like societally, we'll start losing it or whatever, you know.
So there's something called like mass psychogenic illness, which is physical symptoms with no known physical cause are
which is what everyone has. Wake up, sheeple. Okay, the aliens are among us.
Exactly. Yes, it's called sheeple disease in common parlance.
The Medicis are real.
I haven't even gotten to them. No, just kidding. They're not involved. Or are they? It could be that some people were actually suffering from medical issues. Some people had ingested this fungus. Some people joined in because that's a very common social response, is to join in. Another one of the theories is that it was a response to stress and tension. And it was just the result of, you know, being a human being in these times was, I imagine, fairly stressful, and it's possible the mania was just a way of releasing the shared stress, and by doing it together, people would become ecstatic and see visions and this sort of group catharsis. And in Strasbourg at the time, there was a really strong presence of smallpox and syphilis, among other diseases, so it's possible that they just danced their way through the pain. You know, I think we've all been there.
Rejection on a wedding dance floor,
And then the final theory is that it was all staged, and that the dancing mania was actually just religious cults who were acting out these wild dances similar to ancient Greek and Roman rituals that they were trying to bring back, and that the people who weren't in the cult thought the behavior was strange only because they were unfamiliar with it, but it was actually all staged. So who knows? I think you're right that it was probably some combination of all of those things. I think the fact that it only really happened in Europe implies maybe there was this religious element and that people, you know, that it's associated with a saint, and the kind of idea of just having the spirit move you, having visions, having convulsions and everything. But that is dancing mania.
That is incredible.
It's how completely preposterous.
Yeah, I know.
It's crazy. Yeah, so it hit its peak in the 16th century, including at 1518 in Strasbourg, and then it generally died out, and haven't been any episodes in the last couple hundred years.
So I looked it up, by the way, Saint Vitus.
Yeah.
He's a patron saint, as you know, all Catholic patron saints, I think they get to choose three good ones and two bad ones. Uh-huh. So he is the patron saint of this dancing disease. He's also the patron saint of epilepsy, dancers in general, actors, comedians, but he's also... the patron saint of oversleeping and boilermakers, which
wow.
is a niche trade.
Yeah, I need a patron saint of oversleeping. I'm going to start praying to him.
And the reason why he is the patron saint of boilermakers is because, of course, he was tortured in Iraq and then boiled alive.
Okay.
Well done, Catholic Church.
Well
really
done,
close
Catholic
to the
Church.
Bone.
Oh, you love that. So anyway, dancing plague. Done.
So ridiculous. Okay, this week I'm going to talk about a guy with perhaps the most exceptional name we've had on the podcast yet.
Wow.
Maybe.
That's a high bar.
Talk about yourself.
Although it's certainly up there anyway. So this guy called Sir Marmaduke Constable.
Oh, good, good,
no,
good.
It's not.
Marmaduke.
And this guy was a nobleman, he was a courtier and a soldier.
Of course he's a nobleman. He's not going to be like some guy polishing shoes, the name like Marmaduke.
Yeah.
Sir Marmaduke.
Sir Marmaduke.
Sir Marmaduke Constable. Did you know that there's a comic strip called Marmaduke?
No.
Which is about a Great Dane, a giant dog who gets up to hilarious antics.
Oh, wonderful. I should read it.
It sounds like an American comic.
Yeah.
Not anyway. Like Arbino and Dandy.
Yeah, they also made a movie. Who is it voiced by? This is going to be important because everything Will says needs to be in this person's voice. Well. Owen Wilson.
Marmaduke the Great Dane.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I mean, this person, it doesn't, I mean, I haven't read anywhere that he's not a Great Dane.
Yep.
So it's possible. I think maybe just imagine this person being a Great Dane.
Good.
So this Great Dane
like
was a nobleman. What?
Like Hamlet.
Like Hamlet was also exactly right.
That's funny.
So he was a guy who served successive kings. So he managed to serve Richard III, Henry VII, which is actually quite difficult to do if you're going to know the history. They didn't really like each other. And then Henry VIII as well, who was the son of Henry VII. And he was born around 1456. And he was the eldest son and heir of a guy called Sir Robert Constable from Flamborough in Yorkshire.
Flamborough.
Yeah.
Why did you point at me then?
Because you love Flans.
I do love Flans. I love bras. I love Yorkshire. That's true.
And his mother was a woman called Agnes Wentworth. And just a little note on his mother, Agnes. So she was the daughter of a woman called Marjorie Le Despenser, or Marjorie the Dispenser.
Because she had like a cannabis dispensary or something.
She had a cannabis dispensary. Yeah, yeah, yeah,
or
exactly.
She just loved like little bon mots, just like dispensing wisdom.
Right, exactly. Yeah, yeah. In tiny little
nuggets.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. I just can't help but picture Sean Bean in this.
Sean Bean, but also a Great Dane.
You know nothing, Marmaduke.
Nailed the accent.
You're welcome. Was that a Sheffield accent?
That was really on point for the time. It's
like,
really drifted since then.
Oh, that was
it's
sorry.
Like
that's
he
a
was 16, in the room.
15th, 16th century Sheffield.
Yep. Yeah. 13th, yeah,
that,
exactly.
That is actually what it sounded like. So this family, the Constable family, they had this long history, a very long history of supporting the crown in military campaigns that had gone back for a few hundred years. And as an aside, by the way, this is basically how like the whole of the English aristocracy originally were given their lands, just like by being, you know, a warlord. In service
what?
To
they took
warlord.
The land from the locals? No.
Is that the Sheffield accent again?
That was my, sarcastic Sheffield.
Oh, okay. Yeah, sure. Yeah.
So this family had been loyal for so long to successive kings that by 1483, Constable became what was called a, quote, knight of the body, unquote.
Ooh.
Which is K-N-I-G-H-T.
Aww. Knight of the body with an N is, I think, a club in London in the South Bank you can go to somewhere.
It's definitely a flavor of Lynx body spray, I think.
And so he was a knight of the body to Richard III, and then he was granted lands, you know, in this, you know, way that they all are. So he's granted lands by the king for being loyal, basically, that another nobleman had forfeited for trying to rebel. Mm-hmm. So that's how these things go.
Yeah.
And then in 1484, he was given the constableship of Tutbury Castle.
Ooh, Tutbury Castle.
That's just right.
What accent is that, Anna?
That was a flawless.
That's a Tutbury accent.
That was a flawless, exactly. Okay. Tutburgian accent.
And for people who know the history of the time, Richard III's big battle was his big important one was at Bosworth. And
I heard he gave it in vain. Or is that a different Richard?
Richard of York gave battle in vain. And Constable, we think, was there at Bosworth and was generally being a bit of a legend. And he was such a useful soldier that he later then switched sides and then was given a pardon by Henry VII on the 18th of November, 1485. And then he was then a knight of the body to that king as well.
Wow.
By the following year in 1486, and accompanied Richard VII on all his wars in France in the 1490s, which is genuinely quite amazing, because those two kings were like, they were not super keen on each other. So he'd have to have been genuinely a really useful guy to have around for him to bother pardoning him.
He was a body.
He was. Yeah, yeah. He was a body.
Did he have to work his way up, like knight of the foot, knight of the, yeah, knight of the knee?
Knight of the toe, knight of the quadrilateral. Nope, that's not what it's called.
Quadrilateral. Spot the athlete.
My quadrilaterals are in great shape.
And he then succeeded his father in 1488 and became Sheriff of Yorkshire. So he's just got these amazing titles, by the way. Sheriff of Yorkshire is just so cool. So he's, and Constable of Tutbury Castle. So anyway, and then in 1513, so we're getting closer now to the year in question. By the way, he dies in a year that's close to the year we're supposed to be looking at.
Oh, and,
right. Okay. I was waiting for it.
And, which was like, well, yeah, what year are we supposed to be doing?
1519.
Yeah, he dies close to that.
Okay. And,
oh my God. And,
it's weird when Ant's the only one who hit the year bang on.
I mean, he then
commands the whole left wing at the Battle of Flodden.
Labour Party.
the whole of the current modern Labour Party.
Yeah.
At the Battle of Flodden, which was of course present there in its entirety, under Howard. This is Howard of
housing reform.
Who's the Howard that marries King Henry VIII?
Catherine.
Yes, it's the same Howard family, the Norfolks, and then he received a big letter of thanks from the king. So, but anyway, he was basically present at all the big shit that was going down in that whole period. So he was at Bosworth, he was at Flodden, these like massive things that were going on in Europe at the time, and certainly enormous in English history.
What a busy dog!
He was a very.
It's a good thing he was so tall and could, you know, leap from city to city.
Exactly right, yeah. There's enough material here for perhaps three feature-length movies.
I think so.
About starring his Owen Wilson.
Yeah.
Wow.
No, that was Owen Wilson. Yeah.
And Flodden basically marks the end of the Middle Ages in England by a lot of, this is the point at which a lot of historians say, okay, Middle Ages end here. So he was just he was present at all these big moments. And anyway, a word on how he died, and please, so this is a very solemn tale. So some sources say, and I quote, Constable died on the 10th of November 1518 after swallowing a frog while drinking a glass of water.
Oh my God.
Well, he must have had the hiccups or something, right?
I believe that's a key plot point in the movie The Parent Trap with Lindsay Lohan.
But that is also something like a dog would probably do rather than...
Yeah, definitely.
Or is it like a euphemism? Is swallowing a frog?
No,
like...
he literally swallowed a frog and he died because he swallowed a frog. That's what happened.
You have not come anywhere close to disproving my belief that he is a dog.
Well, he was only on step two of getting the fly out of him, so,
that's,
you know.
Right. Like... That's right. Yeah, he needed... What comes after the frog? A bird, probably.
And still today, in the Church of St. Oswald in Flamborough, you can go and you can read a rhyming epitaph describing his life and powers. And I haven't been able to find out what the epitaph says.
No!
So if you could go to the Church of St. Oswald in Flamborough and let us know, you can email in, please. That would be really wonderful.
Sean Bean, and we know you're listening. Please go to your local Flamborough church.
Yeah. I'm looking at it on Google Maps to see if there's any picture of the epitaph, and I cannot see anything.
This is the problem I encountered. So you can email in at randomlygeneratedhistory@gmail.com.
That's the one.
And that would be great to let us know. Thank you, anyone in the Flamborough area. I think we do have 5 or 6 thousand listeners in Flamborough.
Yeah.
We got good penetration, like 97% of the Flamborghians.
Yeah. I think they gather at St. Oswald's Church Tuesday morning.
For the vigil. Just look over to your right now, Flamborough listeners, and you just read it off.
Do you think we get like a sort of a stenciling? They could just put some paper on it, a rubbing.
Nice. Do you send us an etching? Thank you.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Well, can you confirm that Sir Marmaduke Constable is your nickname for a part of your body?
No, it is not. It is not. Not least because the rank of constable is far too low.
Chief Inspector.
At least.
Good. What a thoroughly silly 2/3 of an episode, and also 1/3 of actual history from 1519.
The RNG is fuming.
He also died 50 days short of the year I was supposed to do.
That's pretty good. Pretty close. Yeah, that's pretty close.
With leap days and stuff, you know.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you for joining us. That's like probably everything you need to know about the year 1519, or close to the year 1519, as it turns out.
Yep, and that just means we need to get a new year. So, Will, I believe the RNG was doing a pilgrimage to St. Oswald's Church in Flamborough.
That's right, yeah. And
it has returned.
I'm FaceTiming with the RNG now.
Okay, good.
Still in the Church of Flamborough, which is why it's not in the room.
Of course.
I'm surprised you're not more curious as to why it's not in the room.
I did wonder why it was 20 degrees cooler in here than usual.
It goes to show, when the RNG is away, you know, the two podcast hosts will choose a year that's not the right year, as the saying goes.
We can have it looming over us, forcing us to be more professional.
Glowering at us.
But before I do, if you'd like to support the podcast, you can do so on our Patreon.
Yeah, and we're engaging with more and more. There's like little games, little quizzes, little fun facts.
There's loads of stuff on there.
I've come up with a game for today. Do you want a teaser?
Yeah.
Harry Potter character or real person from medieval times.
That's a great game. So if you want access to us playing games like this and you want to listen in, you can do that on patreon.com/randomlyhistory.
Yep.
And you can get a little free trial, and then you can support us.
Yeah, and you'll be a board member, which means that I think you can sit in the House of Lords.
That's right.
Yep, it's a life peerage.
Yep.
The benefits of being a board member are House of Lords, life peerage, of course, with full voting rights for a political party of your choice.
Yep.
Mineral exploitation rights and some tundra, I believe, that we have.
That's right. Yeah, there is a portion. We have 400,000 square miles of Russian tundra. You can choose a strip of that.
Diplomatic plates. You can park anywhere.
Anywhere in London, in the metropolitan region of area of London.
And it comes with
Birmingham.
An automatic pardon. And
preemptively for whatever you do.
So Trump, exactly. Get on to us.
That's right.
If the Donald's listening, please, please do subscribe. We'll take literally anyone's money.
Anyone's money. We do not have standards.
And we have spent so much money on this podcast. It's not even funny.
What it actually gives you, though, in all seriousness, is the ability to pick a year for us to do on the podcast. You're able to hijack the random number generator and pick a year. And of course, £200,000 cash from Ant. Okay, so I'm firing up. I'm requesting that the random number generator fires up on FaceTime. And next year's, no, hang on, next time's,
yep,
next episode's there number is 1187.
Oh.
Oh, man.
Nice.
Oh. This is what you get. This is what you get when you piss the RNG off by not doing the year.
1187 is a great year, not least because it is the year that Kingdom of Heaven takes place.
Is it really?
Yeah, it really
is.
It genuinely is.
No, it's not.
I swear to God it is.
The Kingdom of Heaven, I thought, was recorded in, 2002?
Yes, no, that was a live action movie that they just shot.
Not all movies take place like at the present moment at which they were shot.
Really? Oh. Oh, I thought everything was just documentary.
That's not how stories work.
You think we would have heard more about the sinking of that boat in 1997.
Yeah, true.
All right, great.
Why did she throw that necklace away?
I actually cannot wait for 1187. We'll see you then.
See you. Bye.